Okay. Sorry for the delay, everyone. I am AC2GS. My name is Roy, and I'm the net control operator for the Limark technical mess. We've been doing this for 45 years now. Well, someone's been doing it for 45 years. I've only been doing it for a small fraction of that. Every Sunday night at 8 o'clock or a little bit after, we sit down in front of our radios and we talk to each other, we teach each other, we learn from each other, and hopefully we entertain each other. And I thank you once again for joining us here tonight when we try and do this all over again. As per usual, let me drop for a second and I will give you the usual link. Let's see if I'm transmitting again. Okay, I don't know. It's going to be a screwy night. I'm having feedback and other situations in this computer, and there is not really that much time to reboot things. So anyway, I mentioned hopefully that my KC2NJI has a great archive site called AmateurRadio.tv. So avail yourself of the wisdom of the archived copies of this Limark technical net. Let me drop for a second, and I'll tell you what I got planned. Okay, it's going to be a basic standard model. We have a couple little comments to make about AI, but there's really not that much. It won't take very long, and I don't think it will elicit much in the way of responses. We will then go to the main segment, questions, comments, and topics for discussion. I'll ask people to hit that push to talk, give me your first name, give me your call sign, give me whether it's amateur radio related or science and technology. I would prefer the first few questions and comments to be amateur radio related. But we'll try and do what we can with whatever people bring us tonight. That should take us approximately to 10:15, and Paul, WS2N, will come on with the SpaceNet report. And that should take us approximately to 11 p.m., and I will return to tie a bow on everything and wish you well for the coming week. Well, that's the plan. If I don't get thrown off of All-Star too many times and the reverb and echo doesn't drive my poor little brain crazy, we'll see what happens. So let me drop, and I'll come back and tell you what little goings-on are going on with AI. Okay. There's been a lot of stuff in the news about the Defense Department. The Defense Department is very upset with Anthropic and is basically gonna make their lives a living hell, and Anthropic's probably gonna go into court and dispute it. OpenAI apparently is taking over their Anthropic's defense contract, and already some employees of OpenAI have resigned over the military deal. So, you know, that's more politics, but it's a significant aspect to artificial intelligence. What else? AI agents are still in the news. A lot of work's being done to promote AI agents. So those are not actually AI programs, so like OpenAI or Anthropic. It's more of a secondary program that utilizes the artificial intelligence and actually gets different types of work done. In other words, if you use an agent and you tell it your credit card number and all the information about it, it can pay for things over the internet. You tell it what you want it to do, and if you're brave enough to give a artificial intelligence your bank account number, it'll hopefully do what you tell it to do. So AI agents are on a very popular discussion, and a lot of different companies are trying to make it a reality for many aspects. So that's pretty much it. I mean, there have been some incremental improvements. I think OpenAI has a advance. When it's a decimal point, it means simply that they've tweaked some settings, tweaked some prompt instructions, as opposed to when it's a full number, it usually means that they've retrained it entirely from scratch and usually increased the training material, which is getting scarce because we're running out of human source material. They're starting to feed AI slot back into these training sessions. So I don't know what that's going to do. Nevertheless, there hasn't been a integer upgrade to many of these AIs in a while. That may be that the server farms and such haven't been built to make that capable, or they might have power limitations, or they may have discovered that they're kind of having problems scaling up. That was the case in OpenAI. There have been two retraining sessions between OpenAI 4 and OpenAI 5. It usually is just one, but the first training, additional training session didn't really lead to anything fundamentally different. So I think they called it 4.5, and the next iteration, when they trained it a second time, they brought it up to a 5.x number. So that's the news for AI. Again, nothing terribly exciting, some political aspects that I don't want people to kind of... computer, I wouldn't get to Selden. My guess is that for some odd reason, the All-Star isn't feeding back. If someone, John, you're basically operating through Echolink, right?
You're live again.
You're big. We can hear you.
Okay. It was something going on in LimeWire. I haven't done anything here. So anyway, John was asking about molecular biochemistry and discovering new things due to AI. Unfortunately, I think that's overhyped as well. The present method that AI exists in is generative transform. Generative transform doesn't produce a consciousness. These AIs cannot originate anything. They put output based upon the training material they have. So if you give them the answer to the question during the training session, they know it. If you don't give it to them, they don't know it. And if we don't know the answer, generally we're not going to be able to train the computers to give us the answer. So unfortunately, although Sam Altman has been quoted to suggest that AI is going to cure cancer and all matter of things, not really. Can they do repeated iterative, combining, variables and coming out with chemicals that on at least a theoretical basis might be of some use. Yeah, but that's not really artificial intelligence. That's simply crunching the numbers endlessly, which computers are generally good at. You know, in the same way that there have been programs where they work in individual people's computers crunching numbers, and then they compile it centrally and they get good ideas to work on. So will computers continue to help us in doing research and coming up with novel molecules? Yes. Is AI going to do it? I don't think so.
Hi, that's very, very well put, and I agree with you. Now, now that you put in that insight, I think you called it existential conscience, and which makes a lot of sense. I know exactly what you meant by that. So, okay, all right, very interesting. The last thing, and is I just want to get if you have any explanation around me now down here in Florida, they're putting up, or well, they're trying to at least, they're going through the process of building a data center, which of course everybody is opposed to because of the electric usage and the water usage. And can you shed any light? Why is there such a need now for these data centers? They seem to be like really, you know, a rush to put up all these data centers where, you know, for the last 30 years we didn't need them, and but it seems now we need a whole bunch of them. What function do these things actually, you know, have?
KC2GS. Well, I mentioned earlier that every integer increase in these designations for these AIs require retraining from scratch. You know, they go to a different drive and they start to train their algorithms on larger and larger series of text and such that they get off of the internet, and they get off of books that have been scanned and all manner of things. And that requires a lot more computational crunching. They're generating massive, you know, terabyte probability lookup tables. And they require exponentially increasing computational power. So they don't have the amount of computer power needed to do the initial training. And then once they've done the training, you know, that's just one guy training them, or, you know, one organization training them. Then you hand it over to the population who you would like them to pay for the privilege, and you need a lot of computational power to get money from tens or hundreds of millions of people simultaneously. So they're looking at it as a optimistic future. They don't believe that this stuff scales. It doesn't scale, rather, that if you double the computational processing, you only increase its capabilities by a smaller and smaller percentage. They're in it for the big time. They figure that if they throw all the server farms that they could possibly build, they will come up with a AI that is incredibly brilliant. The problem, though, is, as I mentioned before, is this particular method doesn't produce new information, doesn't produce new intelligence. It simply stores what has been trained. So I don't think they're ever going to get to that point, but they're all in a race. They say they're in a race with China. I don't think so. I think they're in a race with each other, and China is a good excuse to speed things up. So that's what I gather from what I read about as far as this need of all the servers. And a lot of people are getting more and more upset with those servers. At the beginning, they were so few and far between that they didn't provoke anything. Nowadays, they're choking Memphis because Elon has a bunch of emergency gas-powered generators that are pumping all kinds of terrible things into the air. And there are more and more small towns that are refusing to approve them setting these things up. They require a great deal of electricity, which tends to increase consumers' cost for electricity. You know, the bills go up because they're going to give a sweetheart deal to these big companies because they use gigawatts, and the poor people, you know, living in little apartments or houses don't have that, so they'll be paying the majority of that. And, you know, it takes a lot of water to cool these things because these things produce a lot of waste heat, so you have problems with water supplies. So, you know, the citizens now realize what will happen if they allow willy-nilly, you know, as many of these server farms. For some reason, your volumes are very, very low.
No, it was good.
Okay, that's much better. Anyway, John, that's the best answer I can give you.
You cleared it up for me. Yeah. It's just, I tell you, I'm just pondering there this this whole scenario that's going on there. And I guess, you know, you really shouldn't be surprised, as you brought up with the Bitcoin and everything. You know, I'm just trying to process if they're not creating a conscious intelligence. Which I understand what you're saying, and that can think on its own and discover. And it's just going to, I mean, I could see that they have some planes, this thing will replace the doctor on some level. Well, if it's got all this information, it sees all these symptoms, I think it'll be very useful. But the promises were, you know, way beyond this, and cures and everything. But, you know, I guess I shouldn't be surprised because, you know, as you brought up, and I'm clearly seeing hype. People really get caught up in it, so it takes on a life of its own. All right, as always, thank you, Roy, and I'll be listening on the side. November 2, Zulu Charlie.
Okay, very good, John. By the way, OpenAI has been working on a medical agent module for their AI, and it's not going well at all. Apparently, it's sending people who don't need to the hospital ER, and telling people who really should call an ambulance to take two aspirins and check in with the AI in the morning. So it's going to need to be tweaked and adjusted. The problem is that it's not universally not worried about people. You know, sometimes it's over-worried and sometimes it's under-worried. So it's going to make tuning it rather difficult, I would think. So it's not quite ready for prime time.
Yeah, and I predict not for very long, just like the automated driving.
Oh, yeah, that's a semi-disaster. Well, Waymo is doing reasonably well. It's not perfect by far. But it's much more advanced than Tesla's because Tesla decided to cut a whole bunch of corners. These sensors are very expensive, or at least they were initially. They've gone somewhat down in price. But because Tesla decided to get rid of everything but some cameras, it's very easy to get confused. And that's why every so often it just goes into traffic in the wrong way. So it might eventually get someplace, but, you know, I wouldn't vote on Tesla. If any of these companies have a chance, it might be Waymo. Only time will tell.
Yeah, as you put it, eventually they'll get to some place, but you and me may get to another place before that.
Yeah, unfortunately. Well, I would put AI kind of in the same category as quantum computers and fusion power generation. Sometime within the next 20 years, except that estimate slides forward. So, you know, when another group of people are sitting on the repeater discussing this in 20 or 30 or 40 years, some of those things might still be 20 years in the future.
Yes, like so many other things that constantly get pushed forward. So we've made some good advances. So, and we can hope. Let's see. All right. Thank you again, Roy.
You're quite welcome, John. Anyone want to comment about AI before we move into the main segment?
Alpha Echo 2, Yankee Golf. Your comments about electricity and water are right on point. I have friends in Texas who are complaining about running out of water, and the cost of electricity is skyrocketing. One way they're getting around requirements regarding rate increases is to add surcharges to add to the electric bill. So it's a very, very significant problem. Thank you, Roy.
Yes, Sam. This is a big problem, and it's only going to get worse. I mean, not only are we going to have water shortages and electrical bills going up, the price of computers is going to rise. Hard drives are at a very small supply. The server farms are buying up all the hard drives. I think Western Digital has sold their entire stock of 2026, and we may have to, once they kind of get through what inventory consumers have available, there might be nothing for another year. And memory chips are going at a fantastic price, so everything's sort of going to go up, especially computer related in this. It's going to be a mess.
I was actually thinking about buying another computer just to have one, in case there is, in fact, a shortage.
Yeah, I would suggest if you have that in mind, to do it sooner rather than later. There's always a lag between cause and effect. So, and especially if you go with a brand companies have invested a lot of warehouse stock in memory and drive, so they're not going to see this immediately. The boutique shops might. But if you're really thinking of getting a new one, sooner rather than later would be my recommendation.
Thank you.
You're welcome, Sam, as always. Okay, going, gone. Anyone else want to discuss any aspect of AI before we move to the main segment? Okay, very good. Now on to the main segment. If anyone has any questions, comments, topics, preferably amateur radio, but we'll take up any science and technology. Hit the push to talk, give me your call sign, your first name, whether it's radio or science.
My name is Steve, an amateur radio related question.
Okay, the gentleman after Wes kind of doubled a little bit with you, if you could repeat yourself.
KC2, Mike Delta Papa. My name is Steve, and yes, I have an amateur radio related question.
Okay, Steve, anyone else want to put their names down? Okay. Wes, would you mind if I take Steve first?
No problem. Take Steve first.
Okay, Steve, over to you. What's your question?
Okay, thank you very much. Good evening to everyone on the TechNet tonight. This question has been sort of stuck in the back of my mind for quite a long time. Does SWR vary with power? In other words, let's say many times I've used an antenna analyzer, tune the antenna for, 1.2, 1.5, whatever it may be, the best SWR I could get. And then when I go, let's put 100 watts through it, let's say 100 watt HF, you know, I'll get maybe, you know, 50% higher, you know, instead of 1.5, maybe it'll be 2. Or, you know, 1.2, it'll be 1.7.
Okay. Yeah. Actually, power has an effect. It's a complicated story of what's going on, but among many other things, when you're putting in more power, you have more ohmic resistance loss. That changes it from energy of one kind, you know, current or electromagnetic waves, into waste heat. So that'll affect the discrete components and slightly detune the structure so that the visual is affected. It shouldn't be a dramatic change, but it will be different. And a lot of the instructions that you see for antenna tuners is to set it at a low power, tune it up, and then when you raise the power, some of them suggest that you check out the tuning and just a little fine tuning after that. So yeah, the amount of power that you put into the antenna system will have an effect on VisWa.
Okay, yeah, I had a couple of theories, you know, with, resistance reactions, different capacitance, everything is, you know, according to power levels. So, you know, basically, you know, you go out and you buy yourself an antenna tuner. It's not an all and be all telling you the truth. It's getting you into the ballpark, more or less.
Yeah. You don't want to tune up at first using all the power because if it's not already close to the correct tuning, the SWR can produce multiple voltage potentials that could burn out your antenna tuner and your antenna system in general. So it's always a good idea to tune up on the low side of the power. And if you want to fine tune it after you've done that, that's okay. Chances are it's not going to be off by enough to cause any damage to your antenna system.
Okay, right, exactly. So basically, yeah, you know, like I've been pretty much doing for years now is tune up on power, on low power, and just sort of clean it up on high power.
Yep, that's the recommendation in most manuals.
Okay, very good. No, I appreciate it. You know, I've been wondering that for quite a long time. You know, I'll, use my antenna analyzer, get everything, you know, as close as I can, and then, you know, I'll put 100 watts through it, and let's say I have, an external power meter or something, an external, you know, SWR meter, and, you know, I'll get it at 1.2, and then I put 100 watts in it. It'll be 1.7, let's say.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of times it's a little bit closer to the initial number, but yeah, if you put in a lot of power, you're heating everything up, and discrete components do have thermal coefficients that you have to deal with.
Okay, very good. Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. Always wondered. Thank you for the explanation.
You're welcome, Steve. Thank you for participating. Okay, Wes, what do you got for us tonight?
I have a comment. Not for tonight, but I see rather increasing the output power on the transmitter that actually causes more power to be lost at heat. Because the transmitters are not 100% efficient, and any power is not converted into radio frequency, RF output is dissipated as waste heat, which rises proportionally with the higher power. We could look at it here as inefficiency of joule heating, reduced efficiency at power, high power, the reflected power, which would be the SWR, or eventually component density. Yeah, I can't think about anything else. Reduced performance range, maybe. but I'm not sure. Okay, but anyhow, set my 5 cents into the power loss, Victor.
Okay, I think most of the problem is not at the transmitter itself, but at things like the antenna tuner itself. You know, you got this big inductor, and if you're putting a lot of power through the inductor, you're heating it up, and it's going to have an effect, as opposed to the transmitter stage of the radio itself. I don't think that introduces a heck of a lot of reactance change to that'll kind of screw up the SWR. So, but, you know, it might to a small amount. But I think it's, again, more the antenna system than it is the transmitter circuits themselves.
Okay, thank you very much for that. So I have applications. One of them is Packet RX TX Lite. I sent you email on it. It's pay free, so it's free. But it does have some non-intrusive ads. Not, of course, when you're... if you're offline, then yes, then you can see. But when you're talking, when you're having communication, then it does not. I mean, it's SSB, CW, and FM, and so many things about it. If you don't wanna, if you wanna say a few words about it, back to you.
Let me just make sure that I got this one right. This is the application that simulates conversations. It injects QR Mary, QR Nancy, all kinds of stuff. Is that what we're talking about?
No, we're talking about Packet RX Lite. It's a free Android application designed for amateur radio enthusiasts. I'm reading, allowing users to remotely control and monitor their ham transceivers from a mobile device. So, direct control the ham transceivers from mobile device. It supports multiple communication modes, including single sidebound CW and FM, and enables connectivity via Bluetooth and USB for direct hardware control. The app includes features like frequency database, contact logging, and customizable settings, making it suitable for both beginners and experienced operators. End of quote. Back to you.
Okay. I was thinking of the other thing that you emailed me. Number one, I have an iPhone. So an application that isn't written to use an iPhone is worthless to me. There are other apps that do these things. There are MFJ used to sell a thing that would remote control radio. So they're all over the place, and I'm sure you can find a few that work on iPhones and Android. So I'm not particularly impressed by a company that can't be bothered to write an application for 50% of the cell phones in the United States. So your mileage might vary. Are you out there, Wes?
Yeah, I hear him in the background, Roy. Very, very low.
Okay. We seem to have the same problem. There's something going on at Selden that's not linking All-Star and probably Echo Link to the other repeater. Because I'm looking at my radio and I'm getting nothing. It seems to be working now. I don't know. I think there's a problem with links. Wesley, you want to give it another try? I don't know exactly. I assume you're just operating from Glen Oaks via RF.
I can give it a try. I can give it a try. Let me make a... Okay, now. So I'm on Echolink. I said it might be helpful, and I'm not sure if 50% of cell phones in the United States are iPhones. I believe Android is more popular. Whatever. The second one is CQ200. And I'm going to read the quote. CQ200 virtual ham radio. A browser-based virtual amateur radio application hosted as CQPlace.com, allowing licensed ham radio operators to simulate real radio operation without physical antennas. It supports multiple bands, 20 meters, 40 meters, 80 meters, and so on. Features a dynamic spectrum scope, call sign broadcasting, and offers 3 months free trial. So I assume it is paid application. Back to you.
Okay, by the way, I looked up on Google, and they say about 55 to 60% of smartphones are iPhones. So, that was my understanding, that iPhones are a little bit more popular than Android. And I read something somewhere about how Google is going to discontinue Android. I don't know. I didn't finish the article, so I don't know what to make of that. Getting back to your question, I know someone who used this many years ago with one of my other clubs. He explained it to me, and I just got sadder and sadder and sadder. He lives in an apartment. He can't hook up any antenna, so he doesn't talk on UHF or VHF or HF. So he decided to pay this company to kind of fake the experience. And I don't know, it left me very sad.
Okay, so a question for you. From what you understand, is it like the more people have CQ200, the more people can communicate, but then you have you can listen to 20 meters, 40 meters, 80 meters. Is it like origin base, so you cannot hear Japan or Europe unless, I mean, I just got the grip on it, and I'm thinking, is it worse? Back to you.
No, there's no over-the-air to that. It's all simulated. It is inherently voice over internet. If you're not hooked up to an internet connection, you're not going to talk to the other guy. You're using a cell phone application. He's using a cell phone application. It's running to a server on the internet. And the only difference between that and any other voice over internet protocol application is they fake the radio experience by injecting, I guess, pre-recorded QR Nancy and QR Mary. Like I said, it leaves me very sad. It's just injecting fake noise to make the experience seem to be based in the amateur radio world, when you're really just using an internet voice over internet protocol application. That's all. There's no radio waves involved.
Well, okay. So let's say we have two guys who use CQ200. Only those two guys can talk together with all of the fake around, giving them some sort of, I don't know how to name it, some sort of something that looks like, okay, yeah. And if you have four guys, those four guys could talk, so it's based on how many guys decides to pay them money. No, forget it. It's not for me. That to you.
Yeah, it's kind of a, I don't know. I mean, every so often people like to be gatekeepers, and, you know, people will kind of say this mode isn't really ham radio or that mode isn't really ham radio. I mean, there's a lot of that's going on for digital voice, especially digital voice with gateways. So the gateways and hotspots are usually connected, again, through the Internet. So the entirety of the RF chain is your handy-talkie to your hotspot. And so there are some gatekeepers that say that's only 3 to 6 feet. That doesn't count. I'm not here to gatekeep people, but voice over Internet protocol with some fake background noise, that's not amateur radio in any way, shape, or form. I can't even make a decent case. I mean, if it makes you happy, great, wonderful, yeah, as long as you don't send me the bill.
Okay, and to Alexia, thank you very much for it. The next one was the email that we had no name on it, was no subject. I forgot to put it. So it was GPU having SSD. And we all know that the GPU had some sort of memory, but now it has a physical SSD. The GPU with internal SSD such as Asus RTX 4060 Ti, dual concept card, utilize PCIe lines to provide extra high-speed storage directly on the card. And you can have one slot, two slots, whatever slots. I'm not talking about only the dead card, but talking about where the technology is going. Adding two slots to motherboards, particularly for small factor mini ITX systems. Now, of course, that allows many things, improved cooling, bandwidth efficiency, probably it doesn't provide performance impact, but definitely better thermals, easier access, and performance. I mean, I'm thinking about the performance. If you wouldn't mind to comment on it, back to you.
AC2GS. Yeah, I'm not exactly bored, but my guesstimate would be that if you have a GPU that has inline memory of sufficient capacity, you can run AI locally. The problem is that AIs come in different sizes. The bigger the size, the more capabilities it has. You know, I mean, there are, terabyte models, profile models of very, very large AI. But you're limited by memory that can be directly accessed from the GPU. Or, you know, the GPU-like chip that whoever is making it. Apple has a GPU that's capable of artificial intelligence that can access relatively large batches of memory locally. So I think this is a way, could be wrong, I think this is a way of simply getting a GPU with a lot more video memory capability to run larger models locally. You fell out of the repeater, Wes.
I'm sorry, I've got disconnected. Lines and improved thermal management for the drive. The design allows for faster direct data access, so it is improving performance, which can enhance game providing power for gamers, right, times, and reduce texture pop in. Okay, back to you for your comment.
Okay, I'm not that impressed. They're not really releasing a lot of games lately that are stressing video boards, so I don't know if you really need that improvement for the sake of games. You know, GPUs in general are going to have a shortage again because NVIDIA is going to spend all their time making a lot more money by manufacturing stuff related to AI. So I wish them well. I don't think it's going to be a massive seller unless they can get it to operate on local AIs. There are people who are buying, you know, $10,000 Apple computers that are capable of running decent-sized AIs globally.
Okay, thank you very much for that. And the last thing that I have for today, the time is fresh. So if you want me to add something to it, I can. You want to be short, you want me to be short, I can be short in it, leaving more time for ham radio operators to ask additional questions. It is troubling. It was troubling. The title on the video is, you can find the title, "The Internet Was Weeks Away from Disaster and No One Knew." And I decided to pay attention to more details in it. And guess what? We're talking about Linux operating system, which is widely used in modern civilization. Roughly 45 of the world digital operating system run on Linux. And every one of world's top 500 computer runs on Linux. In the underprint, banking systems, hospitals, manufacturing plants, telecommunication networks, governments, I'm reading, defense infrastructure, even nuclear submarines. If something needs to be reliable, adaptable, and secure, it is almost certainly Linux. It runs on Linux. Now we have an unfortunate story of the guy who decided to be honest in the world where nobody has a comfort to be honest. I'm not saying that they're not honest people. It's just the comfort of being honest is not there. Okay, so let me drop. Okay, double. Okay. So, what's happened? There was a critical backdoor in Linux, and it was discovered in March 24. Now look, today we have a March 8th holiday, so it was 8 days. The critical backdoor in Linux discovered in March 2024 was designated, and there is a model CVE-2024-3094. Was highly sophisticated multi-year supply chain attack targeting the XZ utilities data compression library, specifically version 5.6.0 and 5.6.1. The backdoor was designed to allow attacker execution RCE by bypassing SSH authentication on a compromised Linux systems. Before I go into details and eventually what was the difference between Unix and Linux, maybe Dr. Roy would like to help me. Back to you, Dr. Roy.
KC2GS. Unix is ancient. It goes back to the days of AT&T. They wrote an operating system for mini computers, and I think they wrote a C compiler along with it. So Unix goes back many years ago. There are different flavors of Unix. There's a Berkeley Unix, which then was taken up by Apple, and it's the kernel that I believe runs OS X. Linux is a offshoot of Unix that Linus Torvalds, I think he's Swedish, used some of the kernel and other bits and pieces of ancient Unix and updated it and made it a very compact, very sturdy operating system. And it, these days there are many flavors of Linux, and there are many people who contribute to upgrading the main version of it, and others that tweak it with offshoots.
Okay. So imagine the scenario. Some Chinese guy decided to end a modern Western common civilization. Now I'm just exaggerating. One click. All of the hospitals, all of the banking systems, everything is frozen just because of the back door. And it was, what, we have eight days of March. Nobody knows about it. That's why the video that I viewed, if somebody wants to watch that video, the internet was weeks away from disaster, and no one knew. So that, again, the internet was weeks away from disaster, no one knew. Now, talking about Linux, so there was a professor who actually in that video, and he decided to give a speech in Europe, and there was a guy, Linus Torvalds, Linus, and he had a kernel. It doesn't matter what system do you have, a kernel is something that is of value. And he decided to give his kernel away for free. And was it that good? Well, now we have a plenty of guys who make money on it, he didn't. And when there was a problem, they turned to him and he said, leave me alone, because he wasn't paid for it. He gave to humanity something that he could make money on it, like Bill Gates or whoever else. He gave it, said thank you on it. And of course, the AT&T Bell Labs in 1970, they wanted money for their Unix, the kernel. So the kernel is the most important thing. And we can eventually try to explain what is kernel. Dr. Roy, for your comment, and to XGM.
Okay, I mentioned him earlier, about 5-10 minutes ago. I mentioned Linus Torvalds. He was the guy who wrote up the kernel, but you can't run an operating system just with a kernel. Kernels are the most primitive input-output commands, and then you build upon it and hook your functions to the underlying kernel, and then build a graphic user interface onto that shell, and it's kind of layers and layers and layers of programming. But he was the one who released the original Linux kernel. And as I mentioned, through the years, and it's been many years, he gave it away and maintained a degree of control with the other developers who turned it into slightly different flavors. So there's probably 30, 40 different flavors. There were a couple of Linux flavors that were tied to commercial companies that were trying to make a profit, but I don't think that turned out terribly well. But there's loads of free versions of Linux that people can download and compile source code and use them. I use it on my Raspberry Pi. So it's what a lot of computer stuff is all about. You do something nice, you don't charge, you hand it out to the general public. Some people work on it and shine it up real shiny, and other people just use it. And unfortunately, fortunately for Linux, it became so popular that there's a lot of support from other people doing this for free. But, you know, there are other programs out there that when the programmer decides to retire or gets bored or tired and gives up, it just dies. It's no longer supported. The operating system it runs on will work for a certain amount of time, but eventually there'll be an update that breaks the old version. So, I mean, this is a big aspect, open shareware and such. That makes the hobby much more enjoyable than, you know, you have to buy something from someone for every little bit and piece.
Interesting. So I'm going to stress again. This article about it is also in LinkedIn, not only on YouTube. It's not, it is a funny story that somebody invented, some Chinese guy invented, no. The Chinese guy could finish the modern world. The internet was weeks away from catastrophical, I don't know how to name it, nobody noticed. So the video tells the story about XC Backdoor, a stealthy multi-year infiltration of the
I think you got thrown off of Echolink again.
I'm sorry, I got thrown again. Okay. So Linux that runs internet service, banks, hospitals, government systems, critical infrastructure. And so what happened? The video says that they eventually turned to him. He said, let me alone. So she wasn't paid. Now you're in trouble. I gave you something for free. You're in trouble. Now you're asking me for help. I didn't get paid for it. But then he decided to help. So, Ritaku is a regular human being. He has the feelings. He gave it for free. The humanity didn't tell thank you and ask him for help, and then eventually he decided, okay, I'm going to help. And everything that you have, guys, the way that you quietly right now listening to my conversation on the radio, everything is Linux. Your repeaters run. Works on Linux. Dr. Roy and Twitch here.
I don't know. I think the article was a little overdramatic. According to what I've read on the subject, they just rolled back the bit of upgraded software that included the back door. So, you know, it wasn't like they had to do a rewrite on the kernel. It was just some esoteric add-on that had a back door on it. And I don't think anyone definitively knows that the guy who pulled this is Chinese. He used the pseudonym Zhai Tan. He could have been Chinese, but he could have just as easily been Russian or anything else for that matter. But, you know, I don't think it would have brought everything down. It would have opened up back doors on software Linux versions that use that bit of update, and someone chose to update it as soon as humanly possible and then not update any further portions. So, you know, it would have given the kind of Swiss cheese to the security of general Linux systems. But would it have all gone down immediately in a couple of days? I doubt it. But you know, this is the nature of things. There's always going to be malicious and non-malicious bugs, and people are always looking and checking and fixing. You know, one of the reasons why people are annoyed by Windows updates, among other things, is they find these security issues and they try and plug them as soon as possible. It's a never-ending tit-for-tat type of a thing.